Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu.
Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative committed to helping employers self-fund by providing data and insights to manage their health plans. Info is at the-alliance.org.
Taking a look at consumer rights today with Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection and our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you're with us. Jim's been in that position for a while now, and the department is doing a pretty good job. Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. I'm happy to be here.
You were showing me some figures before we got on the air that the department has recovered for consumers a lot of money in the past year.
Yeah, we're kind of tooting our horn right now. Last year, we managed a total of $15 million. Most of it went directly back to the consumer. Over $14 million went straight back to the consumers who reported losses to us. The rest of it went into the Common School Fund to offset the cost of schools.
So it all came back to us one way or another.
One way or another.
One way or another. That's great. Well, I tell you what, the biggest source of gripes came from telemarketers phoning people who are on the no-call list.
You know,
why should that happen? It shouldn't happen.
It really shouldn't. The no-call list has well over a million Wisconsin consumers on it. I think the latest version of the list was about 1.7 million telephone numbers. So we can expect a certain percentage of people to have complaints. However, there was about 2,700 complaints last year, which is a lot of people having problems with telemarketers. I think two things happened. Telemarketers are calling from all over the world, may not even know that there's a Wisconsin no-call list. So we send out cease and desist letters immediately explaining the law to them, telling them they need to comply. The second thing is consumers really file complaints pretty quickly. They're not very patient with telemarketers. Mm-hmm. So they get a call, they call us immediately.
Well, I think Jake in Madison has something that might relate to that. So let's go to Jake. Jake, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been really perplexed as to how to deal with the telemarketing calls I've been getting because I've been on the no-call list for years, and I update it just to make sure I stay on the no-call list. Some of the calls I've been getting, since I have caller ID, I see that they're coming in several times a week. And I called the phone company. They have sort of an annoyance call section in their company and talked to an operator who was able to determine that a couple of the calls that have different area codes but they're still in Wisconsin are coming from the same company. And I was wondering how that worked. And what she told me was that they were coming from level 3 communications. One of them is a 262 area code, 5100011, and one is a 414 area code, 3750650. I just wondered how one company would use numbers from different area codes. They keep calling me.
Well, a couple of thoughts. First off, you should report that to the no-call people. File a complaint. We will track down who is actually making those calls and make sure that they understand they're not supposed to be calling you if you're on the list. So the only way we know if someone is making those calls is if consumers complain and tell us about it. The second thing, kind of the technology of being able to move calls around so that they appear from different places is something that telemarketers have been using now, and it has to do with there are actually systems that you can purchase that will change your phone number on your caller ID to another number if you want to mask who you are. And so my assumption is that they are using the technology that changes the number as it's shown on your caller ID.
So, how would Jake, how would Jake just call your 800 number then? Or?
Call our 800 number. We might as well say that right away. It's 1-800-422-7128. Tell them that you have a no-call complaint, and they will get a complaint form to you, and we'll have someone follow up on it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's 1-800-422-7128. And if you'd like to join in with a question or comment to Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Give a call. And Stella in Sturgeon Bay, you're next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I have a question to find out if we have any recourse to any kind of assistance from the from your department in dealing with not-for-profit organizations and political parties that call us, which they're not subject to the Do Not Call list, I understand, but we have repeatedly requested them to remove us from their list, and they have not done so. Do we have any recourse?
Unfortunately, right now, that's a very difficult subject. There is no law regulating the not-for-profits, the charity callers, the political parties. The no-call list and all of the telemarketing laws associated with it have to do with someone soliciting for the sale of household or personal goods. And so these folks are arguably not soliciting for the sale of anything. There have been a couple of attempts. There is another attempt in the legislature this session to introduce bills that would also regulate political parties and nonprofit callers. At least to the extent that if you tell them don't call me back, they won't be able to. But, yeah, this comes up especially in election season, and we take a lot of calls, and unfortunately we can't do anything about it at the moment.
What I do is I tell them that I understand they're not subject to the Do Not Call list and that there's a reason why people sign up for the Do Not Call list, which is why we don't want to receive, because we don't want to receive calls like this. So I highly recommend that you get the Do Not Call list and you observe it voluntarily, but none of them seem to do so.
I agree, and I wish they would.
Probably your best bet is to contact your local legislator and urge him or her to support the bill.
There will be several bills out this year, I'm sure, that want to make changes such as that to the no-call. And so.
How do we find out what bill it is?
Well, there's several bills.
There is on the website, wisconsin.gov, there is a place where you can look up legislation. I couldn't tell you the number right offhand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Every session it's introduced and changes to a new number for the new year. But if you call our hotline and ask to be put in touch with me, I can look up the bill number for you. But if you just call your legislator and say, I am in support of attempts to regulate political and nonprofits as far as their telemarketing, they'll find the bill number for you also.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Stella. Thank you for calling. And Steve in Wausau, your turn now. Hi, Steve.
Hi. The age-old thing about books in the mail and things like that, where you might have signed up for a free gift, and then when you get the book, the letter comes. If you decide not to keep it, just return it to us. The book comes out of one state. The return address to send the book back is in a totally different state, and you send the book back in their box with their label. And you get a letter saying you're past due on your payment, and I've kept the receipts from the post office to the limit of what it cost me to mail the book back. But is there any other things you can do to ensure that you have proof of that you mailed it, or if they keep dunning you for the you know, it's almost cheaper to pay the bill than it is to do the proof.
Right.
Aha! You've fallen into their trap. They make it easier to pay than to fight. It sounds like you're doing the right things. You need to maintain some kind of proof that you, in fact, mailed the book back and that it's, you know, it was done in a timely fashion. The difficulty is a lot of these are being sent out by what they call fulfillment houses. So the main business may be in one state and then they have a warehouse somewhere in the middle of the country that fulfills the orders as they come through. And then so things get mixed up in the mail, and the internal communications in the company isn't what it should be. The other thing I would recommend is if it gets to be a problem where you're at an impasse, file a complaint with us. That's the only way we know if one of those companies is causing a lot of problems, is if we get a number of consumer complaints that causes us to take a look at it.
Okay. What was that 800 number again up to get your information?
That's 1-800-422-7128.
Okay. That's for every complaint, not just for telemarketers.
Right. Right. That's our main complaint number, okay. And then we will get you to the people you need to get to internally once you call that number.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Steve, for calling. Bernie in Manitowoc, your turn now. Hi, Bernie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question on a little different vein. Within the last year or so here, I had hired a contractor to do some work on a property that I have. He was repairing a bad concrete footing, and in the process of repairing the footing, his guys took sawzalls and destroyed the wall that was intended to fit on the footing, and left the building with the roof hanging down with, you know, no support. Well, they stuffed a 2x4 under it to hold the eave of the building up. And I refused to pay him unless he restored the wall to what it was. There's more to the story, but I don't want to get into that on the radio. But so he took me to court. I won in the initial hearing. He was obviously lying about what he had done. But then he demanded a full trial, what I guess they call it de novo, and he hired an attorney. And I thought it would be pretty much the same thing again, go and tell your story and whatnot. And the attorney succeeded in having all my estimates and information from other people who looked at the job and, you know, said what was wrong with it, thrown out because I didn't have them there as witnesses that could be cross-examined. So I lost that case, and I contacted your department in Green Bay. They said that they can't do anything about it because it's a workmanship issue. That's the first part of my question. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, the second part of it is that I was looking on your website, and there's all the Ag Trade and Consumer Protection rules governing contractors. And, you know, he's obviously not following the rules with regard to that either because, for example, I found out he doesn't have workman's compensation insurance for any of the people who are working for him. I don't remember all the things, but there was a whole list of about 5 or 6 things that he should have done that he didn't do on that.
Okay.
And I even spoke to the DWD, and they confirmed that, you know, basically he's been telling the state he only has one employee, he doesn't file 941s for any of these guys or anything. And I'm just wondering, you know, what are my options at this point? I've got a building with no wall.
Yeah, okay.
Well, workmanship is a very tough issue. In Wisconsin, contractors are not licensed. There is no fund, you know, state-operated fund to guarantee that if they knock your wall down that you will be reimbursed. And that's something that the legislature has looked at. There are some states where they are licensed, and there is kind of a common insurance fund that all the contractors pay into. So strictly workmanship issues are very difficult for anyone in the state to deal with. Typically, those have to go to court, which is what mm-hmm. you've done. On the second question about if he's violating the other rules, the home contractor rules in Wisconsin that we enforce have to do with the contract itself. The contractor has to tell you what they're going to do, how much it's going to cost. It has to be done on time. They can't change the cost without talking to you if they have run into some unforeseen problems and they need to modify the contract. A lot of that, if he's in violation of that, we probably would like to look at that complaint. And what happens is you're probably still going to end up in court because to get reimbursed for your damages from the workmanship, you're going to need to go to court. But there is a second little function going on there that if he is violating the contractor rules, you can sue him for double your damages. And so if you get an attorney and push this up to the next level in court, you may have some more information that you can present to the court and to your benefit. So I would say file the complaint with us, and you probably need an attorney if you're going to go on into court the next time to keep your information from being excluded.
And the number to call is 1-800-422-7128 to get a copy of the – or to get that form and talk to the people. Thank you very much, and good luck to you, Bernie. Appreciate it very much. Jim Rabbit, our guest of the Bureau of Consumer Protection and our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking consumer protection issues now with Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Glad to have you listening in. Lots of callers online, so we'll go right back to the phones and to Linda in Racine. Linda, hi.
Hi, good morning. Actually, I have a couple of questions, but my main one is we have caller ID, and recently we have lots of calls coming through that say Wisconsin call, and therefore you can't tell who they are, and sometimes they are solicitors. Do you know why these calls are coming through this way?
Yeah, you talked about that a little bit earlier. Is that
okay? Well, I just tuned in. So
Wisconsin calls specifically, I did know who they were once upon a time. They are a call center.
Oh.
And they do calling for a lot of different clients.
Oh. Okay.
So they may be soliciting. They may be doing surveys. I believe it is a call center that's located, at least one of their units is located right here in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why you're seeing the Wisconsin calls. It's not that they're changing their ID. That actually is.
Yeah, but the other ones are, we're having them come recently through that they are people that we recognize the phone number. So they are people that we do know, and yet they're coming through as a Wisconsin call.
Well, now that's unusual.
Yeah, and I'm not the first one that has noticed this.
Hmm.
So I don't know, you know, how to, if we don't recognize the phone, I mean, I debate, you know, so but if we recognize the phone number, we pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, some of them are private calls, and some of them are coming through from landline phones, and some of them are coming through on cell phones.
Now, that's a brand new one on me, and I do not know how those calls are getting that caller ID placed on them.
Okay.
So
let me just get this straight. Originally, what you told me is that they were a call center, so they would be a solicitation call. But these other ones, so how would I go about finding out what this is all about to get it correct?
The information that I had the first time we looked at the Wisconsin calls, which, you know, appeared to be a company name, was that it was a call center.
Okay.
But now if you're saying you're getting other calls with that ID on, I do not know.
Okay.
I would say the best thing we can do is if you contact our 800 number.
Okay.
And we'll have one of our people trace that down and find out what it is.
Okay.
Because I am interested if that's something else going on with the phone system.
Yeah.
We want to know.
Yeah, like I say, it's happening more frequently, and other people have made the same complaint. So let me just reiterate. It's 800-422-7128.
Yes.
Okay. And the other quick, I'm hoping it's a quick call question, is our solicitation calls, when we get a solicitation call, many times it says out of area. So I just don't pick it up because I don't feel like dealing with them. But are they supposed to not call on Sundays, or is there a time span like they're not supposed to call past 9 p.m.? Is that true, or is that a myth?
Yes. In Wisconsin, they're not supposed to call before 8 in the morning or after 9 p.m.
Okay.
As far as the out-of-area designator, I'm not exactly sure. There's about three different codes that show up.
Okay.
Unknown caller, private caller, and out-of-area caller.
Okay.
And I think the out-of-area means they're calling from somewhere that our phone system doesn't identify the phone number.
Okay, okay.
So it's a technical glitch between their phone system and our phone system that they can't pick up the number.
Yeah, so, well, and that's fine. I mean, I just don't answer. I don't, because so many times I get a call and they don't listen as far as identifying themselves or whatever. I did get one call. He asked for my husband, and I said, I'm sorry, he's not available right now, and I would ask that you not call, you know, as we've been told to do. And he said, it is your name Richard? And he hung up on me. I wish I would have had.
That's irritating.
It is.
Well, good luck, and call that 800 number, Linda. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
I'm going to have to chase down that Wisconsin calls.
That's a new wrinkle.
Yes, it is.
Ken and Hayward. Let's go to Ken. Hi.
Good morning, fellas.
Morning.
I've had about roughly 100 calls this last year. I've been on the state and federal list since they started. I was able to track some on Star 57 and Star 69. I turned those that I could track, quite a few, over to the local sheriff's office. They needed permission from the local district attorney to trace the calls. He refused to give it. I wrote a letter to the local judge, hand-delivered to his secretary. That was many months ago. I have not heard a word. So what do I do?
Mm-hmm. You're probably running into a situation where you should file those with the no-call program. The sheriff's office they prioritize the work that they do, and a lot of times they're not going to take a civil, what they consider to be a civil case. They have too many criminal cases to work on. Where the no-call program is dedicated to that. So it may be that they're declining just as a matter of not knowing that they have jurisdiction, realizing that the state maybe has better jurisdiction, so they would transfer it on to us. They should just take the information and send it to us. But I would encourage you to send it to us instead of to the sheriff. We will react to those.
Well, does not the sheriff have jurisdiction? Does he need the permission of the local district attorney?
To the best of my knowledge, what the sheriff probably does is talks to the district attorney and says, if I bring this case to you, will you prosecute it? So it's not a permission question, but it's a question of, will you handle this case? And the district attorney says, no, I'm too busy. I've got criminal cases going on. Don't bother bringing it to me. I just don't have any time.
So you're better off to call the 800 number, and 800-422-7128, and because that's what they're set up to do.
Okay. I thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, Ken. Jen in DeForest. Jennifer, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My complaint, and I don't know if there's anything we can even do about it, but Christmas is horrible at our house now with all the packaging of the kids' toys. You cannot just open a box and dump out the toy. You've got to have pliers next to you, scissors, some of that plastic, and the wires can be quite dangerous while the kids want to just play with their toys. And I was wondering if there's anything that can be done about that.
Oh, boy. I'm being stumped today. This is wonderful. I know that there is a huge issue with businesses in packaging. They like that plastic that's indestructible because it stops shoplifters from taking things out of the packages.
Oh, sure.
Because you'd have to carry a toolbox into the store to get it out of the package. So I'm not sure that there is anybody that would exercise oversight over that. Probably the only thing you can do is complain to the manufacturers, say, I'm going to stop buying products that come in these kind of packages. I know you're doing it to stop shoplifting, but I need to get the product out at some time. Maybe we have to have childproof packaging or something like we did for our prescriptions.
Yeah. Right.
There really is no regulation or, to my knowledge, no control over that type of thing.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Thanks.
Yeah, I can empathize, Jennifer. Having a three-year-old at home with all those boxes to open, you really do have to have a pliers handy and everything else.
You know, and you don't dare leave any of those twist ties laying around or they'll start chewing on them. So.
Yep. Jack in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I got a call a couple of weeks ago from a carpet cleaner who said he was exempt from the no-call list because he wasn't calling on behalf of somebody else, just on his own. But he did use the term we instead of just me. Tell me who is exempt from having to abide by the no-call list.
There is an exemption for individuals who are calling on behalf of themselves and are not being controlled or, operating under the purview of another operation. So if he truly is an independent, the idea behind that, as I understand from the legislature, was a little mom-and-pop type business. They wanted to be able to just go ahead and do their business. They figured they were local people, and if they irritated their friends and neighbors, they'd hear about it. So so the question is he truly a sole proprietor operating his own little carpet cleaning business, or is he sitting in a room full of people who are all considered to be independents and under the control of someone else? We have arguments with those types of businesses under the no-call program quite often, and we have to take a look at their structure and see how many people are there and how they control them. So I would say if you call our office and file the complaint so we have the ability to take a look at them, we can find out if he's truly a lone operator or not.
Well, I kept him busy for a little while, and he sounded like a nice guy. He sounded like he was probably up in years. But I couldn't really get a handle on whether he was pulling my leg or not. It sounded like he might have been legitimate, and so I gave him a pass and didn't file a complaint.
Okay.
The only time I've gotten a call, and I'm conscious of these things, because 100 years ago I used to sit on a board helping consumers with their auto repair complaints and things like that. So I have a little background in the work.
Yeah, the exemption for the mom and pops, we were very nervous that what that would do is it would immediately cause every business to turn all their employees into independent contractors. So the language is a little complicated, but it does say not only do they have to be sole proprietors, but they have to be not under the control of an umbrella, so that we wouldn't all of a sudden turn everybody into independent.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jack. Thank you for calling. And Sharon in Cuba City, it's your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I've been meaning to call you for a long time about actually two calls that we repeated that we keep getting over and over again. And I didn't have your number, so I decided to call in today. But we keep getting the recorded calls from this Georgian law office. And they give us an 800 number, and then they give us a file number. And they say it's a personal matter, and they want us to call. Now, we haven't called because it sounds suspicious. So are we right?
And it's a recorded message?
Yes. You'd think if it was a legitimate law office calling us about a problem, that somebody, a person would call. But it's just a recorded message each time.
Today is full of firsts for me. I'm in Wisconsin, pre-recorded solicitation calls are illegal. So if they're soliciting something from you out of the blue, that's not a legal call. Mm-hmm. It is legal for the library to call and tell you your book is in that you reserved, with a pre-recorded, but or your dentist or somebody like that. But if these guys are soliciting, then that call would be illegal. The question is, if they're giving you a file number, what in the world? Are they trying to tease you into calling them back?
That's what we're wondering about.
Well, I guess I would, if I finally gave in to the temptation of the curiosity to call them back, I would simply call, give them the file number, and tell them to send it to me in the mail. I wouldn't discuss it with them. The other thing I would just be suspicious.
Yeah.
Most law offices, if they don't get an answer quickly, they feel a duty to send you something in writing and make their best effort to make their contacts. So
right.
If they haven't contacted you by mail, I would be surprised.
Okay.
All right.
And would you repeat one more time? I want to make sure I have your number, your 800 number, correct?
Sure. It's 1-800-422-7128.
Okay. I didn't have it right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Sharon, for calling. And Tina in Green Bay, it's your turn now. Hi.
Hi. Once upon a time, I used to work for a call center in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told that woman had mentioned that they asked for her husband, and she said, don't call. And they said, are you Richard? We were told to ask for the husband if we knew the husband's name, or even if we didn't, we were told to ask for Mr. So-and-so, because men are more likely to let you talk, and if you're asking for money, to donate money than women are. So we were always told to ask for the mister, because men are more of a pushover.
Wow.
That's probably true.
It is true. Women will cut you off short. They won't give you the time of day. They won't listen to you. They'll just hang up. And so we were always told if, you know, the wife answers the phone, put them back in the system and say call back later and make sure you ask for the mister.
That explains why my wife gets so angry when I'm talking on the phone to some solicitor, because she knows better.
Yep.
Well, that's an interesting fact. You know, there must be some research behind that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there is. And I think about my own wife and myself. Probably true.
It is.
Thanks, Tina.
Good day.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to get a little of that behind-the-scenes reasoning that goes into some of this. Nancy and Madison, hi to you.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to talk a little about a bit about our fax line. I'm wondering why I'm continually getting faxes from monetary institutions. They're people that are trying to sell us different kinds of stock. And I do call back the 800 number that takes me off of that particular invitation to join. But something that we get at probably about 4 or 5 a week. Now, this is on a line that we have registered as a no-call line. So are faxes exempt from this?
Yes. Faxes are not considered to be a no-call violation because there's not a conversation going on. It's a one-way. There is a separate law about unsolicited fax, and it's got a little bit of mushiness to it. It allows them to fax during the middle of the night, but not during daytime hours. The idea is not to interrupt with your business, but we have businesses call us and say, hey, every morning I come in and there's paper all over the floor. The thing's been running all night. The other thing is the law does say if you tell them not to fax you anymore, they are supposed to keep a list of people who've requested not to get the information.
Well, there must be a multitude of numbers or institutions that are doing this with multitudes of different numbers.
Right,
because
yes.
The number that I call back is different on every single fax. And it's very true. They come in during the night, and often there's 2 or maybe 3 on our desk. And, I mean, this is just a household.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and oh, excuse me. There was an attempt last year, and I'm not sure if that bill is being reintroduced this year, to say that if you tell me not to fax you anymore, I can't turn around and give your phone number to the guy next to me.
Oh, they've done that.
Yeah. And you know, because the reports that we get from consumers is I get one from a different fax machine every day.
Exactly.
And so the law would make it illegal once they've been told not to fax you to share that number with anybody else. So,
well, let's work on that law.
Yeah, that would be a welcome addition, I believe.
Thank you very much for the information.
Thanks, Nancy. Yvonne in Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Yvonne. Yvonne, are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. We lost Yvonne because she had a comment on the suspicious call earlier. Yvonne,
Hello. Yeah, sorry. I hit the wrong button on my phone. I had you on speakerphone.
Oh.
Oy vey. We get not a lot, but a number of calls of that nature from banks. I don't think I've ever gotten them from lawyers, but from, you know, creditors. And it's because my husband has a name that's exactly like the name of somebody with a really poor credit history. And perhaps the lawyer, in the case, what happened with us is that there'd be a some type of creditor, a bank,
yep,
you know, who's looking for someone with the same name as my husband. And I think because of privacy laws, they can't divulge the purpose of their call. And perhaps that's why the woman who called earlier is getting these calls from a lawyer that she can't identify. There could be an identity mix-up where they're trying to talk, they're trying to track someone down.
That is a very good observation. If it's, I notice now the calls from the doctor to remind me that I have an appointment, they don't say much else.
No.
They don't say an appointment for or anything. And probably the financial calls as well, they're concerned about identity, and so they're pretty careful about it. And the fact that there is a possibility for an identity mix-up is a very good comment, because I'm sure that happens on a fairly often basis. I think especially collection calls, they call everybody that has that name and see if they can't find someone who matches the rest of the information. So,
well, in each case, I was able to, I called the person back, and I was, this is about a private matter. And it does sound really, really sneaky, but, I was careful not to divulge any personal information. I simply said, what are you looking for? Who are you looking for? And then she gave me her information, and I said, nothing else matches, just the name does. And she said, thank you very much. I'll go, I'll try somewhere else.
So, great.
Wasn't a big deal. Hope that helps.
Thanks, Yvonne.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it very much. And Marion in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Marion.
Hi there. I'm complaining about what was my primary web server on the computer. I emailed them to ask them to discontinue the service, and it didn't happen. And they kept on deducting a monthly fee from my credit card account. So I called them again. Well, first I called them and called them. I got no response. I complained to the bank, and they wrote a complaint. And actually it was AOL. And then they stopped deducting from my account and stopped the service. But 2 months later, they began again. And I called and went through the whole thing again and threatened to go to your Consumer Bureau, State Consumer Bureau. And finally they stopped, but they never refunded the 2 months that I requested the refund for. Now, I just gave it up because it's such a hassle. But I heard that this goes on all the time, that AOL, but all the web servers take advantage of customers by continuing the service regardless of whether they've complained or not. I'd like to know if a lot of people have this happen to them.
It is, in fact, such a common problem that we actually wrote a law saying it's illegal to not disconnect when a customer asks you to disconnect, because it was going on so often, and we just wrote a very specific law. Failure to cancel is illegal. I would encourage people to file complaints about that. It is something that we are actively pursuing, because it does cost consumers millions of dollars. If they have a million customers in the state and they take $29.95 from every one of us every month.
That's a lot of money.
We're talking some real money. So I encourage people to file complaints. And if you can't get the refund, I would even file the complaint about that.
Mm-hmm.
Our people get paid to work on that kind of thing, and they don't get tired. They'll keep going after it, and maybe we can make it happen.
And good luck. And again, the number, the 800 number is 800-422-7128. Give that number a call, Marion, and anyone else, too. If you've got a complaint, call that number. They'll see what they can do. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I enjoy myself very much.
And we'll have you back, and we'll do this again. Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection and our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Call that 1-800-422-7128. They'll get you some help. Coming up, we're going to take another look at the history of Wisconsin Public Radio with Randall Davidson. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.